Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome to the Wednesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. Jim, a lot more bad news than good news to sift through, so we're happy we do have some good news today, and that's that Wisconsin Governor Scott Walker is not only standing strong, but he's not taking the bait. It seems as though someone pretending to be influential conservative donor David Koch got on the line with Governor Walker in an attempt to try and bait him into either agreeing to crazy statements or, even better, from the liberal perspective, get him to say something completely crazy. But he comes off pretty well.
He's about the only reasonable one over there. I figured if I talked to him, he'd go back to the rest of the gang and say, you know, I've known Walker for 20 years. He's not budging.
Oh, what's his name again?
His name is Tim Cullen.
All right. I'll have to give that man a call.
Well, actually, in his case, I wouldn't call him, and I'll tell you why. He's pretty reasonable, but he's not one of us.
And so, Jim, you know, in a situation where the governor's probably pulled in a million different directions, he's incredibly on message and not taking the bait. The best that the liberals who pulled this off and posted it on Mother Jones can point out is that he took the call in the first place. If that's the best your stunt produced, that's a pretty good performance by the governor.
Buffalo Beast, I know James O'Keefe. James O'Keefe is a friend of mine. And you, sir, are no James O'Keefe. Having said that, if somebody dresses up like a pimp and a prostitute and tries to go into Scott Walker's office, I think they should be on guard. You know, this is a reflection of, I think, the mentality of our friends on the left here that, you know, well, let's call him up and let's pose like this conservative billionaire and we'll say crazy things and we'll expose just what really, you know, Scott Walker is like behind closed doors. And then you find out that behind closed doors, Scott Walker is pretty much the same guy he is when the doors are open. That I think I love about this is that he just kind of goes out and recites his perspective and says there's one Democrat who seems to be pretty reasonable in who they're talking to. But there's no real huge revelations out of this. And each time the faux Koch comes out and says something, you know, kind of bonkers or, you know, oh, you're not talking to these Democrat bastards, are you? Walker just kind of shrugs it off. And, you know, Ben Smith of Politico said that, well, from this we've learned that politicians tend to tolerate wacky comments from people with enormous amounts of money. Shocking to all of us. And this sounds like just Walker being polite. The other thing is that one of the kind of central conspiracy theories of the left is that not just Scott Walker, Greg, you and I are mind-numbed robots programmed by David Koch every morning of what to do and what to say. And here is Walker. Clearly, he's not a pawn of Koch because he doesn't even recognize the guy. He doesn't even recognize the voice. The guy starts acting weirdly. This audio tape, this phone call recording designed to make Walker look like some goon hired by this shadowy conservative billionaire. And as some people said, if you want to know what's wrong with the Koch brothers, you just have to talk to any George Soros employee and they'll let you know what's wrong with shadowy people and with a lot of money in politics.
Well, that's good news on two fronts, as we've mentioned. First of all, that he's standing strong. Secondly, that he is who we thought he was, to quote Dennis Green from his...
Precisely. He is who we... And hopefully he won't let the unions off the hook.
Exactly right. On to a different state now, and one of the folks that is being rumored to be very seriously considering a Republican presidential bid is Indiana's Mitch Daniels. He's gotten great plaudits for what he's been able to accomplish as Indiana governor over the past 6 years, but at a time when his brethren like Scott Walker, like Chris Christie, like John Kasich and others are rolling up their sleeves and digging in to try and salvage some sort of budget sanity by negotiating with these unions and to some extent having to erode a little bit of collective bargaining power in order to make those cost cuts stick, Mitch Daniels apparently doesn't have the stomach for the fight in this current environment. Here's what he had to say in a couple different clips just yesterday. The first one about his opinion of this right-to-work bill in Indiana that has sent House Democrats now fleeing to Illinois, which is apparently, fleeing legislators, is Illinois' number one tourist attraction now. Here's Mitch Daniels on why he doesn't really want this fight.
For reasons I've explained more than once, I thought there was a better time and place to have this very important and legitimate issue raised.
He also says he's not going to send the state troopers to try and track these Democrats down. He thinks their conscience will bring them back. Perhaps the most troubling comment was this.
Well, my view on this is well known to the leadership on both sides, well known to the public. I haven't changed a single thing. I don't attempt to dictate the agenda. I'm not in a position to, really, of the separate and freestanding superior branch of government.
Doesn't have any interest in trying to determine the agenda of the state government. Boy, that's encouraging.
Greg, this news broke my heart. And I'm, you know, so I look at Mitch Daniels and I realize there are a lot of social conservatives who are looking at him warily, as if the guy who shows up in a suit at a wild party, you know, the idea the guy is going to sell you out. He's, you know, giving off this bad vibe with the talk of truce on social issues. But I think I understand where he's coming from. He's got this very ambitious education reform agenda that will ironically end up really enacting a lot of reforms that the teachers unions in Indiana don't want to see. On the other hand, sometimes life gives you a set of circumstances, and if you're going to be a political leader and a national leader, you need to step up to the plate. And I'd say, you know, look, when your state's Democrats are throwing a tantrum, the kind of tantrum that I try to discourage in my toddler son, and they run for the border like Smokey and the Bandit, then you got to, you know, just step up and say, look, this is unacceptable. You know, this is not – you didn't see congressional Republicans fleeing Washington, D.C. to stop Obamacare. I don't think it really would have worked anyway.
Right.
But, you know, this one of those things where this is now this new tactic by Democrats, which is apparently citing the constitutional precedent of I'm taking my bat and my ball and I'm going home. I like to think of these as small-scale temporary secessions that basically you're saying we're going to ignore all precedent. We're going to ignore the jobs we were sent to do. We're going to ignore tradition. We're going to ignore the rules, and we're just going to run away because we can't get our way. These, you know, there are times in politics where you're going to lose because you don't have the votes, and these guys want to completely upend that notion of, hey, the guy who, you know, in a legislative chamber, if you have more votes, you win. By trying to bring the whole thing grinding to a halt. And what's kind of striking about that is that Mitch Daniels doesn't even seem that bothered by this. And he keeps repeating this, he has faith in their consciences that they'll come back. Well, look, at some point, I don't think they're moving to Illinois. I don't think they're, you know, fleeing the state forever. But I'd really like to see a little bit of anger over this. I mean, my readers are furious over this because, you know, if Rich Lowry gives me a job I don't want to do, I can't run to North Carolina to avoid it. You know, I mean, sometimes your job involves things you don't want to do unless you're a legislative Democrat. Greg, I think I want to be one of those when I grow up because I'll never have to do anything I don't want. You get to see the world, a lot of travel, and everything's on the taxpayer's dime. Heck, who wouldn't want to be one of these guys?
And maybe his budget fight isn't as dire as some of the other ones that we're following in Wisconsin, Ohio, and so forth. But if he's elected president, if he runs and is elected president, he's going to have to roll up his sleeves and have some very difficult fights. And if he's not willing to take on a fight like this, and he's elected president, it looks like his fiscal record is going to be a lot like the man who employed him between the 2001 and 2004. Obviously, that's George W. Bush. And while we like George W. Bush about some things, his fiscal record was pretty awful, and that's the last thing we want in the next Republican president. So another
that was a bad martini, Greg.
That was a bad martini. And just as an addendum to that, we lost John Thune as a potential Republican candidate. It was clear he was going to have to raise unseemly amounts of money just to get his name recognition out there, so his chances of doing well weren't that great. But he seemed to be pretty close to a conservative who handled all three legs of the stool. And one thing that I'm looking for in a nominee is someone who can actually complete a sentence on a regular basis. We haven't really had a very articulate nominee since 1984, so I would like to add that to the resume of whoever our nominee is. Unfortunately, it won't
elitist
be.
Rhino.
I want a conservative who can speak English. Is that so much to ask? On to number three now, and now we move on to Michael Capuano, who is a Massachusetts Democrat, which is kind of redundant, unless you're talking about the U.S. Senate. But when it comes to the House, they're all Democrats, and Michael Capuano is incensed about what he sees in Wisconsin and Ohio and some of these other states. And Jim, apparently Tucson was further ago than I thought, because Capuano now says it's time for the unions to get a little bit bloody to get what they want. So apparently this era of civility has come to a screeching halt. When the president calls what Scott Walker wants to do an assault on unions, Capuano says it's time to get bloody. I guess the kumbaya spirit is over.
Yeah, one of the reasons the arguments for civility after Tucson didn't really get much traction on the right was because in the eyes of a lot of us, it sounded like a call for unilateral disarmament. And if there was really legitimate anger at both sides, if when Steve Cohen on the floor of the House implicitly compares Republicans to Nazis, and there was every bit as much outrage over that as Sarah Palin's map with the symbols on it, then maybe people would have listened, that maybe there would have been a legitimate case of, hey, maybe we shouldn't always compare our opponents to history's greatest monsters. But as we're seeing, there are plenty of union members who are trying to argue that Scott Walker is the second coming of Hitler in Wisconsin. But if you really believe that, is protesting enough? Shouldn't you be leading a militant insurrection to try to overthrow the governor? Although I guess some people would argue that's what they're doing. But in this case, you know, Capuano's calling for blood in the streets, and nobody really is batting an eyelash at that. And that's why the argument post-Tucson was doubly damaging. One, it was damaging to this, you know, this furthering this notion that extreme political rhetoric is a problem on one side. But it was also damaging to the concept of, hey, you know, I'd like a political rhetoric where Godwin's law was broken less frequently. I'd like, you know, to wake up every morning, check my email, and not be called, you know, a mass murdering serial killer and such. I'd like to not have to respond by pointing out that these emailers are glue sniffing communists. But unfortunately, this is the political rhetoric, the political world we're in. And, you know, if you really want things to get better, one, everybody's got to start with themselves. And two, those who appoint themselves, the arbiters of fair rhetoric and good rhetoric and you know, civil rhetoric, have to be willing to call it out when it happens, you know, whether it comes from their friends too. And so far, you know, Capuano's not going to face any, you know, real career problems as a result of this statement. The idea that this is anything other than a call for the right to stop making their arguments, conservatives are going to be rightfully skeptical of this notion and largely dismiss it, which is a shame, because I think there could be room for a better, you know, a better discourse in this country, but it won't happen until folks on the left start policing their own.
Yeah, clearly they haven't learned their own lesson from their own rhetoric, but of course it was all a big canard anyway, so why should we be surprised? Jim, wish there was better news to talk about today, and hopefully there'll be some more tomorrow. Talk to you then.
Kumbaya, Greg. Kumbaya.
Jim Garrity of NationalReview.com. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Join us Thursday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.